Okay, go ahead.
Okay, thank you so much. As I try to, I'm not sure if the presentation is visible. Secretariat?
Yeah, it is visible. You can go
it
ahead.
It's visible.
Hello?
You can go ahead. It's visible.
Okay, it's visible. I'm trying to put it on slideshow, but I don't know what's wrong with my computer. Apologies while I try to
that.
Let's see.
You can go to the slideshow. Move your cursor to the slideshow.
I'm trying to go there. I can't find it on my...
Move up your cursor.
Oh, yeah, there. Okay, yeah. I can see that. Okay.
Oh, no, just click on...
I've clicked on it, but it says recording.
And then says, go under file.
Okay, let's do that one.
Yeah. Under file from the beginning. Just click that part. No, not on file.
Sorry.
Not on file, just under file.
Okay. What,
that part that says from the beginning. You see that
from the current slide.
Sorry. You can click on that as well.
Okay, no, that's fine. Got it. Yeah. Thank you, sir. Sorry about that, Chairperson.
No problem.
Honorable member, our presentation is not going to be that long. The Chairperson has indicated that we have time pressures. It is quite short, at least about 14 slides. I think just to highlight that we get our mandate from the government notice. So whatever we are busy with over the 5 years is guided by the government notice as indicated there. Those are the functions that are outlined in the government notice in terms of what CPSI needs to do. I just want to indicate to the honorable members that should there be a change in the strategic direction of the CPSI, we will have to go to the government notice and amend it if there are any changes. But as it is now, since 2011, we are guided by the functions as outlined in the government notice. I think not to waste a lot of time, we are aligned to the MTSF, also the priority one as indicated earlier by my previous consultant and presenters. What I want to highlight on this slide is that our programs are guided by what is needed out there in the public service space, but also what is happening globally. Public sector innovation is not a South African program. It's a global program, and there are approaches that are applied globally, and we link and align to those global practices as well, because we're part of the global innovation system. In terms of our programs, CPSI is very small. We have only two programs with three sub-programs in each. Those are the program one is about administration, as you can see. Program two, this is where we carry our mandate. In terms of research and development, solution support and incubation, and enabling environment. I will unpack what these three work streams do in the next couple of slides. But I want to also highlight that we're doing this threat plan and APP with the executive director post vacant. It's been vacant since September, I think, 2018. And the CPSI, as I said, very small, with only 30 posts. We have vacancies, I think about 5 vacancies during this period. We only have 2 outcomes. It's just to governance, corporate governance, which is, I must add, as a national government component, our compliance burden is similar to any department, whether it be water affairs or the SG as an example. We have to follow corporate government scripts as much as a government, a national department or a provincial department has to. And obviously accountability, making sure that there's no corruption, economic use of resources allocated is very key to the CPSI. The second outcome, it talks to the innovative culture and practice in the public sector and trust. This is where the mandate is carried. And this will be unpacked, as I said, in the next slide. Just a summary, as you can see, the outcomes, we have 2, we have 4 outputs and a number of activities that will be explained in the next couple of slides. Over the medium term, over the 5 years, as Peter said, we have about 80 targets that we are committing to. I just want to alert the members, honorable members, that the strategic plan of the CPSI does not change over the medium term period. Reasons for this is that currently we are undergoing a review, and we felt as an organization that until the CPSI is reviewed and there's a new structure, we will not be able to, you know, commit to more. As you've seen, we've got like 45 million for the current financial year. We are very constrained in terms of capacity. I can just give you an example. We only have 1% responsible for research or 1% responsible for development of solutions. You'll agree with me if you are, for instance, with one development project, you can only support probably one or two departments at a time to develop innovative solutions instead of probably assisting, say, 10 departments, because then you will need foot soldiers. So over the medium term, then those are the targets that we set. As you can see, 2021, 22, and 22, 23, we have not changed all those targets. They remain the same. But we want to also indicate to the Select Committee that once the review is done and the new structure is approved, the CPSI will have to go back and review its strategic plan to bring in more programs based on the number of people that posts that have been created on the organizational structure, so that we can deliver more. That we've taken into consideration. I thought, let me highlight it, because honorable members may be saying, why are you doing the same over the 3 years instead of expanding as you proceed? This will be amended, should be the need over the medium term. But just to say, in terms of the outcome, the first outcome, it talks about governance issues. You know, we want to make sure that we have an unqualified audit opinion on both financial and non-financial information. And I must say, over the 3 years, three successive years, CPSI has maintained a clean audit. So we want to maintain a clean audit over the medium term. In terms of outcome number two, which talks to innovation initiatives, we are looking at doing some innovation and research development initiatives over the medium term. We also want to push the replication program. And when it comes to the replication program, I want to highlight to the Select Committee that it is a global practice, that you cannot find or develop innovations and leave them localized in a school or in a hospital. It's very important as part of the public sector innovation approach for you to replicate so that you can start to identify challenges when you scale up. Even with any program, once you do one or two and you scale it up to 10, there might be things that you need to change. I can use an example of what happened with the social grant, the grant that was given to unemployed people. At the beginning, it was chaotic because there was no time to pilot and test. We were under pressure. Hence, you found public servants, some of them were successful in claiming the 350. You found people who died were counted there as well. Because when you move from piloting to full scale, there are things that you need to, checks and balances that need to happen. So I thought, let me emphasize this, because most of the time people think maybe the replication, it doesn't make sense. But in the public sector innovation space is an approach for you to take a solution that you find in a province, in a school, and upscale it to other areas in that sense. In terms of how we're going to spend the money over the medium term, our compensation of employees takes about 54% of the budget in our public administration. One of the cost drivers is audit costs, because we go through AG as well to be audited. But I want to report that over the past 3 years, we're able to convince AG to charge us less. For instance, last year, they charged us, I think, 1.3 million, but in the current financial year, they gave us about a 26% reduction in fees. So we've been, over the years, trying to reduce this cost so that we can move that saving to other areas, especially in 2002, to make sure that we Some of the cost drivers there is like, you know, 14% goes to our computer services, and you know, operating leases is about 36% of our program. So as indicated before, administration tends to be bigger. You know, it takes a bigger budget for you to actually do your work. Unfortunately, that's the nature of government. When it comes to program two, we are guided, as I said, by the needs and also about what is happening globally. In terms of research and development, it takes about it intends to do four research and development projects within annually over the medium term, and this accounts for about 16% of the budget, of the total budget. We want to see that investment in research and development increasing, hence the review to make sure that we have enough capacity in that unit to be able to do more. So I hope in future, once we have the new structure, we'll be able to spend more in this important program. In terms of replication, which I talked to, we are only able to replicate two solutions within the a year, so that we can counter challenges that come with scaling. The next slide, I just want to indicate the bullet that talks to the district development model. We have decided that in this from this current financial year, as the CTSI, we want to support the implementation of the district development model, so that, you know, most of the district, I think it also includes the hospitals that are in that district, or clinics or schools. There are a lot of challenges that can be solved with the innovations that are already there. So we want to enter into that space and, you know, support those districts to implement some of these innovation solutions to solve their service delivery challenges. It will be our first year when we are actually making a concerted effort to work in those districts in support of the district development model. I hope when we come back to account, we'll be able to tell you how far we are in terms of supporting the DDM. And I think as part of the DPME template, they always ask, how are you contributing to the DDM? And we're unable to say a lot as CPSI because we're not in that space. But in future, we'll be able to, starting from this current year, we'll be able to talk to that. Another important point or program is about innovation knowledge platforms. Again, one can say, why are you having, you know, an annual conference? A conference is actually a community of practice where you bring innovators together so that we can share what's happening globally and be able to let public servants interact and, you know what's happening out there, what this one is doing in this province. And most of the time after this engagement, which we are not doing online, you know, through webinars, you find a province approaching us to say, we are interested in what Mpumalanga presented in this area. Can you facilitate that they show us all that we can learn from them? So after this engagement, there is always work that follows. It's not about just having a webinar and then it's all good and done. We always get projects after this such engagement. And I think another thing that is important is that you cannot talk innovation and not talk knowledge management, because it defeats the purpose. You end up with people reinventing the wheel because we are not learning from each other. So it's from that perspective that we have a innovation knowledge platforms. I want to also indicate that over the years, we started by strengthening the innovation knowledge platforms, but now we've moved our attention more on research and development as a focus area, because our innovation platforms are sort of stable in a way. And we are now focusing on supporting departments to develop solutions and hire software coders so that they can solve their own problems internally. I will not talk to this slide, but I just want to highlight on bullet number four, which talks about innovation workshops. I've had an informal discussion with the principal of the school where we said, you know, I've been saying this concept called design thinking we need to empower public servants to implement design thinking skills so that they can solve their own problems. And I think this design thinking skills can also benefit the Batopele program, by the way. So I hope at one stage you'll be able to engage with the DG to see how we can infuse design thinking as part of the Batopele program so that public servants can then be able to solve their own problems. So the NSG, the principal told me that night, they're looking at coming up with a course to train public servants on design thinking. So we'll be taking discussions further on as they develop their curriculum to share our experience as well as CPSI.
I think moving on to the budget, I think let me move quickly just to show how much we're getting as indicated by the DPSA CFO. 42, 44, moving on to 45 in 2023-24. And as you can see, how we cut the cake, 55% goes to employees, compensation of employees, almost similar to what DPSA is spending on, theirs is 54%. Our goods and services are 44%. So we then have machinery and equipment at 1%. That's the split in terms of the two programs. In terms of the SAP program, program one, that's the split. Most of it goes to corporate resource management, which also that's where we pay our lease, maintenance of the building, security, cleaning, and facility management, all those things are paid from that allocation. Then we have the strategic management unit, that's where the post of the executive director is, and the office of the CFO. Research gets 6 million, solution support, 5 million, enabling environment, 9 million for 21-22. I just want to indicate that we, as it is now, because the money is allocated over the MTEF, there are always savings from enabling environment, as I said, for us to move that money to research and development. So these are the allocation as they came through, but we used to have a very robust international program, which we have sort of nipped in the bud. Some of the sessions that are require venues, we move them online, so there's a bit of saving. Once we do, during the year, we are able to move money to where money is needed. The pie chart just shows you where we're spending our money. As you can see, as I indicated, we want to see R&D moving up, followed by SSI and spending less on enabling environment. But as it is, most of the money goes to program one in terms of compliance burden. As I said, we need to comply, we need to segregate duties and make sure that the program one supports program two in doing their jobs, in carrying out their functions. Unfortunately, the split is as it is, and I think it's not unique to CPSI. Most of the departments are faced with a similar outcome in terms of the spread of the budget. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the presentation. What we will then do, I want to believe that we have covered all the entities of the department, and we will now invite honorable members to engage with the presentation, clarity-seeking question, matters for discussion that honorable members of the view that must be brought to the attention of the leadership of the department, inclusive of the leadership of the administration, and also school principals. Let's open the floor for engagement. Honorable members can just indicate by show of hands. Let me also check in the chat room whether there is anything that has to be that must be brought to the attention.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Lancy. The floor is yours.
From my side, it's just a word of appreciation, Chair. And then I don't have much to say, but basically I'm covered. It's just to appreciate the report made by all entities and by all structures and the departments, but I'm covered.
Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Lansman, Honorable Matevula, and then followed by Honorable Kai.
Thank you, Chairperson, and I really like to welcome the presentation as it has been presented in our committee. I've got one question specifically for the School of Government. I would like to know, as a department, what are they doing to assist people living with disabilities, which are suffering discrimination in our country, especially in terms of assisting them in training in the public service. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Matevula. Honorable Kai, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And I would like to welcome the opening remarks of the DM and the presentation by the DG and the leadership of the entities. let me just first start with the to check with the department. My focus will be on the department. I know some departments that we've dealt with, they always talk about the revised the MTSF 2019-2024 that has not yet been adopted by the cabinet. I'm not sure if at this stage the revised MTSF has been adopted by the cabinet, and also what effect is it going to have on the department's targets. The other issue, Chair, I just want to focus on is that I don't know whether the Department of Planning and Monitoring, because I have my observation is that when departments come to present to us their APPs, they tend not, especially when it comes to the administration program, there's no consistency or coherence in how they report with regard to that program. And others will go to town in terms of, for example, saying with regard to women, this is a target, say 50% in the SMMS, and then we'll have also target with regard to people with disability, and also have targets with regard to the procurement in the BBBEE compliant enterprises or businesses. They will have targets with regard to the payment period of service providers within, say, 30 days. I know, for example, Department of Small Business, their target is 25 days. Those kind of targets, there would be a target on the audit outcome that their target is to get a clean audit, for example, or unqualified audit opinion. So, but others will be silent with regard to those issues. I thought that Department DPSA would be number one in terms of highlighting, because some of these targets are actually developed by DPSA. For example, the issue of
people with a disability, the target of 3%, for example, comes from DPSA as in one of the norms and standards in the public service. But we thought that it would be a champion in terms of highlighting those areas for us as this particular committee, but it's very silent in terms of coming out with those specific targets. But also, I just want to know the difference with regard to program two, the human resource development, and also the corporate services, which is part of administration. Why can't those be brought together under administration program? Because I see that in other departments, human resource forms part of corporate services, and it would be under program one, which is the program administration. Unless then the DG can clarify as to why there's a difference. Chair, I just want to find out about this National Anti-Corruption Council as to when are the members going to be appointed, and whether there are any timelines, and what are the terms of reference or the mandate, and how is it going to be funded or resourced in terms of human resources. With regard to the test, this will go to the DG, DM, as to with regard to the ministerial performance agreement, how are these agreements being accessed, given that we don't have a body that we hold into account in terms of ensuring these performance agreements of the ministers in terms of checking performance, financial and non-financial, the Auditor General's reports, how do you hold the ministers accountable for such? You'd have, for example, departments that have unauthorized expenditures. Others would have recurring findings, fruitless and wasteful expenditure. How do these, are these part of the ministerial performance agreement, for example? The other area that I'm concerned about is that the department has lots of frameworks and policies and legislation that is going to be embarking upon in terms of their strategic plans. My worry is that it's a department that should be a custodian of an efficient, capable, and ethical state. I'm worried about the time frames of these frameworks, the policies, and the legislation that is still to be developed. And I'm asking myself, when I was reading the document, is why would it take so long for a particular, I don't want to go to a specific, because they are listed there. Why would it take this so long? Others would be in 2023, others in 2024, others in 2025, when the committees that are holding the department accountable won't not necessarily be there. The individuals that are in this committee now may not necessarily be there after the election in 2024. Nobody knows. But I'm just concerned, not that my concern is the fact that some of us won't be there. My concern is that why does it take so long? For example, if you talk with regard to Department of Finance or Treasury, every year there's a legislation amendment, whether it's fiscal framework, that is done within months, whether you're talking a division of revenue bill, it's done within months. whether it's an appropriation bill, it's done within months. But then when it comes to other departments, it takes a long time just to develop a legislation and bring it to the attention of Parliament. I just want a clarity with regard to those issues, Chair. Otherwise, I don't have any other question, but just to appreciate the report. Just a concern about the slide on the National Schools of Governance, that the caption on the slide 8, that is the helicopter, and then I think that statement, the caption is insensitive, that the pilot and the cameraman, in 10 years, they've lost their job. I think they should use another caption. I find that caption insensitive. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable High for that. From my side, the strategic in question relates to just an update in terms of the single public service. How far we are in terms of bringing this matter to finality, because it was indicated to us that the Public Service Amendment Bill is being revised, and also the Public Administration Amendment Bill. How far are we on that? To the name change from Policy Development Research and Analysis to Human Resource Management and Development. What informs that? If we could probably just be taken on board in terms of that. This program is quite important, I want to believe, particularly given the fact that it deals with a minimum compliance with minimum norms and standards, and therefore, what message does the name change send? The third one. Recently, there's been news around shift from around the collective bargaining agreement. Am I wrong to suggest that there is a movement, or is that the indication? Does it relate to the new round of negotiations, or is it a reopening of the position that the department has taken, particularly in consultation with the National Treasurer, I want to believe, and then the third one, Chair, relates to the support that we are giving as a department in terms of ensuring that there is compliance with the disclosures. Is there a message that suggests that there is positivity on the part of senior managers across the board in terms of compliance, because this is at the center of ethical leadership, as it has been indicated, fighting corruption. Are we satisfied that there is movement in that regard? And then lastly, under program 4, Chair, there seems to be a message that suggests that this e-government services and information management received the smallest allocation, which is 6.82% share of 35.9 million. What does this say? because if you one looks at the forecast of this program, it deals with issuing legislative framework to institutionalize the national e-government strategy, propose measures to national treasury on the optimization of ICT, and develop the IT service continuity policy framework. Given the pandemic and given the fact that majority of government employees are delivering services from home, I thought that there will be much more improvement in terms of the increase around this area. But other than that, I'm happy with the presentation. Other than getting a sense around the stabilizing public service, particularly around Batopeli, I would say despite that there is a reception, there is a drive on the part of our employees to prioritize and embrace Batopeli, which obviously is important given the negativity that that is coming out of the Zondo Commission, particularly given the centrality of various managers and DGs that appear there. Doesn't it impact negatively on the concept of Batopeli? Let me then give over to the DM. The DM will guide us to whether the DG will then share responses, and then the DM will give a final remark. But I'll read guidance from the DM. What do you, DM?
Yes, yes, Chairperson. Maybe let us allow the DG, the principal, as well as the executive director to respond, and then we'll come last. Thank you.
Thank you, DM. DG, and your team.
Thank you, Chairperson. I have the CFO as well here, so he should be able to take up some of the questions, and I think I have colleague CDG Linda as well. The first question I picked up is in relation to the revised MTSF, which has not been approved by Cabinet. Yes, it has not been approved by Cabinet. It went through all the processes in terms of the DG's cluster and et cetera, and we were given authority by DPME, which is responsible for planning, to use the MTSF as it is in terms of our planning processes, whilst they handle and they manage the process of taking it to Cabinet. The understanding is that if there's any changes when Cabinet approves it, that come through, we'll have to go back to our APP and do the relevant adjustments. But as the DGs, we have agreed to the MTSF, revised MTSF as tabled. And if ministers bring any changes in the process, we will then be able to go back and adjust in terms of our APP. So we couldn't delay the APP processes because the MTSF approval processes by Cabinet have delayed. We have also those departments that have deliverables that have to do with the economic recovery program. The economic recovery program is a program that has been approved directly by Cabinet, and therefore those departments have also been instructed to integrate their deliverables on the economic recovery program into their APPs as well. There was also a question around, we have targets that have to do with policy directives, frameworks, and etc. So core to the role of DPSA is developing norms and standards. So how we communicate norms and standards, it's through policy directives, it's through circulars, and it's through policies that we issue. So it is in that context that there's areas where we have to develop policy directives. And I think that what is important, again, on the issue of timelines, is that most of the timelines that you are seeing in the MTSF, we have moved them forward in terms of our planning. For instance, you would see on the MTSF that I think we were due to submit to cabinet by 2024, I mean to parliament by 2024, the amendments to the PAMA Act as well as the Public Service Act. But we have moved that our plan is to submit by 2021-22 financial year. So where we are currently is that we are undergoing consultations in terms of the amendment bill, which once we have completed our consultations, we're going to consolidate that information and submit and take it back to cabinet, but ultimately submit to parliament. I think we have some deadlines in our current timelines in our current financial year to ensure that we submit to parliament. What we have done so far has been to engage with a number of stakeholders, including labor. Labor has asked for us to give them a week and workshop them on the amendments so that they can make direct inputs. Labor, through the bargaining council, have requested, so we had agreed. We agreed on this week, actually, that we are in now, starting from Monday, but they came back to us and requested that we postpone because they are busy with polling or engaging with their members in relation to the wage offer that has been put on the table. So they are unable to focus on that. So that brings a little bit of delay in our time frames, but we have committed to labor that we will not move with the process until we give them an opportunity and get to engage with them on that. Then there were there was an issue around areas that were targeting around equity, such as disability, I guess, women and others, and we were silent on these targets. And yet it's our policy directives that we have issued in respect to this. So what we do, Chairperson, is that from a planning perspective, we have the APP, which is high level, and then we have our annual operational plans, which look at the detail that each of our branches look at in detail. So the detail around our compliance in respect to the targets as the department first is what is the responsibility of Program 1. So it is within the annual operational plan of Program 1. We must comply 50% women, we must comply with the target for disabilities and etc. So it's not in this document, but it is work that we do, and we have our targets in relation to that because it is policy directives that we have to align with. The second aspect of this is that the bigger compliance by other departments, because remember for GPSA, I'm responsible for GPSA as a department, and then for certain issues that relate to the public service. So we would need to report annually on certain areas of compliance by departments, including compliance on equity issues. So if the committee would want us to bring that report in terms of compliance by departments, would be able to do that. It would also reflect on compliance by GPSA in respect to that particular issue. Then there was a question around Program 2. Why Program 2? Why are we having corporate services and we're having Program 2 HRM and D separately? So how GPSA is structured is that Program 1 administration is the program that services the department. So you have your HR, your labor relations, your communications, all issues that are related to the department. So your corporate services in Program 1 helps is basically focused on HR and the components I've spoken about, which are corporate services related components. Then in HRMND, which is Program 2, that is the unit or the branch that has a responsibility around developing norms and standards on human resource management and development for the public service. So they issue standards, norms and standards, which we as DPSA in Program 1 must also look at and implement as a department. So they are for the bigger public service, whilst Program 1 is for internal. So how we always explain it, we say internal and external. So Program 1 is internal, the rest of other programs, the four programs are external because they deal with the public service broadly. Chairperson. There were questions about the National Anti-Corruption. I am not in a position to answer these questions. This is the work that is facilitated and coordinated by DPME. I think that they would be best placed to deal with those issues. The question around the lots of frameworks policies, I think I have dealt with it in the time frames. I have dealt with it to indicate that we've moved lots of those issues in our APP. We can't move them from the MTSF point of view because the MTSF is a global document of government. We don't have editing rights on the document, but in our own APP, we have moved the time frames significantly. Update on a single public administration, how far are we in bringing matter to finality? Well, I mean, I think single public administration is a program that is not going to be finalized anytime soon. But in respect to the aspect of policy, of legislation, there's two processes were involved in this. One process is to issue regulations to effect certain sections of PAMA as it is currently the Public Administration Management Act. You recall that PAMA is our own platform to engage in single public administration. So we have some regulations that we have now, the three parties that needed to agree on the regulations, it's Minister of Finance, Minister of COGTA, and SALGA. Minister of Finance and Minister of COGTA had agreed. SALGA was questioning certain issues. We are having engagements with SALGA. We have been promised by SALGA after engagements with the executives that they are in the next council executive committee meeting of SALGA, they are going to make a recommendation to SALGA for support of the regulations. And should that happen, then our regulations that have to do with issues around how we handle issues related to discipline management and et cetera, we will have a platform to integrate in terms of our systems in relation to that. The second aspect of this is the amendment bill that is out now, the PEM Act amendment bill, the one we spoke about earlier on and said that we have published, we have been receiving inputs from members of the public. We have also been having engagements with some key and strategic sectors of society that we think are also critical to hear on their inputs. Included on this is labor, which we still have, they've asked for some time with us, and we are trying to find the best time, understanding that there's the process of wage negotiations, which is also taking a lot of time from labor. So this process, in terms of our time frames, we should, by end of this financial year, be submitting the proposed amendment bill to Parliament. Name change from policy and research to HRMND. This is a process that happened, I think, in 2019 when the new minister and deputy minister at the time got into the institution. The idea really here is to create emphasis on the human resource management and development aspect of the public service. The policy and research function is a function that has been decentralized to all the DDGs because each branch at a DDG level, they should be able to do policy work. And the HRMND aspect around development of norms and standards and developing this capacity of the state that you're talking about is the area of focus in terms of this particular program. Shift on collective bargaining agreement. Is there a movement? I didn't understand this question, but I thought I'll answer it in two ways, and I think that the Prime Minister would also probably say something on it. The first issue is that in terms of the current issues that are on the table in terms of wage negotiations, the labor has been given time in terms of the bargaining processes to go and consult with their members. There is an offer that was put by government on the table to break the deadlock after the facilitation by somebody who has been appointed via the ILO processes. And we will come back, I think on the 4th of June, Labour would come back and give us feedback in terms of what their members are saying, whether they accept the offer that is on the table or not. That's one area around it. The second area around it is that there's still the issue, the incomplete issue of a resolution of 2018. where the payment for one for the last year of the resolution, the third year is the matter that is still currently with courts. And I think the appeal process, the date of the date in August was given by the Concord, because Labour is appealing the decision of the Labour Appeal Court through the Concord processes. So that is a process that is unfolding. The court has asked the different players to submit their papers, and as the PSA, we've also been working with Treasury around our papers in relation to this particular matter. And so I think from our side, we are waiting to see and hear in respect to that one. Then the third question is support given to ensure compliance with disclosures. What is the attitude of senior management? Chairperson, if I recall very well, the latest figures that we have from the last year's compliance report was that 98% of our SMS members do the e-disclosures. And so it means there's a really high uptake in relation to the disclosures. I am not sure now, I have not seen the report yet because the system closed in April, end of April. So the colleagues are still analyzing and they will do the necessary reports in terms of that. But there's acceptance that colleagues must disclose. And I think that colleagues are really disclosing at an SMS level. At levels below, there's still uneven how colleagues are reporting, but we can again bring that data per category should the committee wish to receive it. So I think there is support, but remember there's many other areas of compliance that we expect departments to comply on. Some areas of compliance departments do very well compared to other areas. We have been involved in this first quarter of the financial year in engagements with provinces. Just to engage with them on issues around compliance and, you know, our approach in relation to our work and some of the key strategic interventions that we want to put in place as DPSA. We've engaged with about 5 provinces now. We have 4 that are still outstanding. So we have a picture in terms of how these provinces are doing in terms of compliance, and we are monitoring and supporting that on an ongoing basis. The next quarter, our target is to focus on national departments in terms of the same approach as well, just to have one-on-ones when necessary with those departments that are struggling as well with compliance. Then the last question was around the allocation for Program 4. What does this say in terms of the forecast to the program? I think that how I want to answer this question is to indicate that DPSA on its own, this program, I think it's a program like the other programs where we have to develop norms and standards. So we don't have to buy gadgets, buy software, buy things for the public service. The public service does that. For instance, the investment into the integrated financial management system is handled by Treasury. So we wouldn't get a budget as DPSA for systems and for procuring services. But the small budget that we get as a department is really at the level of norms and standards. And I want to agree that the budget is not enough. The budget is not sufficient, but we have to live with what we're having as a department. And the issues around the ICT, the government's response from an ICT point of view to pandemics, that type of budget is a budget that is sitting in departments. For instance, in Program 1 within the DPSA internal, we've had to look at our budget for IT so that we are able to increase our bandwidth, we are able to get more capability in the form of tools of trade so that more and more of our employees can be able to work remotely. So they need laptops, they need data to be able to do that. So we do those things as DPSA as part of Program 1 allocation of our budget. But in respect to the bigger allocation for the state or for the public service, the different departments have their own allocations and they work around that. The little allocation that we have, it could be better, it could be bigger, but the budget cuts that we experienced also affected some of our plans. But the little budget allocations that we have from Treasury, so we have to prioritize in terms of this particular unit, issues around the development of norms and standards other than buying equipment and buying capabilities, because the departments must do that on their own. So, Chairperson, I think I've tried to answer the questions. I'm not sure if for my colleagues there's any question that I've left out that they may want to take up. Thank you.
Thanks from our colleague Happy with the representation as made by the DG, or there's an addition that the team would want to make. Silence means consent. Let me then give over to the DM.
Thank you, Chair. I'm not very sure whether the chairperson is saying the NSG does not want to respond, or CPSI. There were no questions related.
Yeah, I think the DG was quite comprehensive in a response. That is the sense that I get. Let's probably pause back that question to both the NSG and the center for innovation.
Chairperson, the principal here, there was only one question for the NSG, which I can answer.
Well, it's yours, Chair.
The question from the NSG was about whether or not we do accommodate learners with disabilities in the public sector. The answer is yes, we do accommodate persons with disabilities, our learning programs. For an example, starting from last year, we're sending out notices to all departments informing them that for our virtual and e-learning courses, we do have multimedia platforms that are embedded on our system to aid persons with disabilities who are enrolling for the NSG. And we also then do accommodate for those who are attending face-to-face courses as well. But on our e-learning and our virtual programs, yes, indeed, they are enabled, whether through hearing aid, we've got robots that are being used, or for sight impairments, we also have got programs that are accommodating, and they work with the relevant departments in doing so, and we are popularizing those causes as it were. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Principal. Let's go to the Center of Innovation.
Thank you, Chairperson. There were no questions for the CPSI. Thank you.
Back to you, Deputy Minister.
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, DG. Thank you, Principal or representative, as well as the Executive Director. Thank you, Honourable Members, for the opportunity. Let me just broadly say, on the issue of disabilities, I fully agree with everything that the DG said. And maybe to say that broadly, the principles that we use when dealing with people living with disabilities in the public service, they include non-discrimination. They include full and effective participation of people living with disabilities. And whatever that we do ensure that happens, they include equality of opportunities. They include accessibility, but also include respect for difference and acceptance of persons with disabilities, accepting their disabilities. And everything emanates from those principles, whether it is the quotas that we serve, the 2%, that we say at least it should be a minimum for all departments in the public service when it comes to the employment of people living with disabilities, or the National School of Government, and they've already indicated that indeed they have a specific policy or guidelines on how they accommodate in their training people living with disabilities. What is guiding all of us are these broad principles when it comes to people living with disabilities. Chair, I think on the issue of a revised MTSF strategic plan, the DG answered that. On the ministerial performance agreement, who is assessing that? First, ministers, they sign the agreement with the president. Surely, obviously, that will be, therefore, the first line where they account on their achievement of targets that are set in their performance agreements. But of course, ministers in terms of the constitution, DMs as well, they account to parliament. And therefore, because these are public documents, there's nothing also preventing parliament to hold us accountable for what we have signed with the president. So we can actually be assessed also at that level. On the issue of legislations that are taking long and probably the National Treasury and so on and so forth, Chair, the process that happens in Parliament happens at the executive side. So the department will draft a bill, whether it is an amendment bill or a new bill, they will draft the bill. They've got to consult with everybody who might have interest, a stakeholder that might have interest in the bill. After that, you've got to take it to the cluster, cabinet cluster. They make their inputs, you consolidate. You take it to the cabinet committee, make their input. Then if cabinet committee agrees that it goes to cabinet, then it gets gazetted, inviting public comments on the bill. But you still have got to get to take it to NEDLAC. You've got to take it back again to the cluster, to the cabinet committee, to cabinet, for cabinet only then to say this bill can now be tabled in parliament. And that is the process. We have experienced, Chairperson, where if bills and do not follow all these processes and anyone decides to take, whether it is a legislation to court, they look at all these steps to say how were they fulfilled. Of course, particularly, they will be looking at the parliament steps. But if the executive does this correctly, it's to the extent that the bill that goes to parliament is a quality bill, it becomes very difficult for whoever to challenge that bill. And that's what we always try to say. Whenever the bill goes to parliament, it has got to be a properly, qualitatively drafted bill so that there isn't much that can be challenged in the court of law on the bill. I think on the issues related to the bargaining chamber, I think the DG is correct. We've put something on the table. We're waiting for Labour to come back, and of course we'll take it from there. So indeed, it's still the continuation of the facilitation which was extended, and when they come back, they're going to tell us as to what the members are saying, and we'll take it from there. And we're hoping that it will be a positive feedback from the members. Chairperson, we thank you again for the opportunity that you afford to us. We take this very seriously because we're not just doing it to yourselves. We are accounting to the people of South Africa, the taxpayers, about the money that is given to us to say, spend this money, and that money belongs to the taxpayers. And through yourselves who are representatives of the public of South Africa, we then say this is how we're going to use that money, and we take that very seriously. And that is why, Chair, again, I must apologize that the minister could not come here, but he requested specifically the DM to be part of this meeting because he is attending the special cabinet meeting. Otherwise, he would have himself been in attendance of this meeting. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Deputy Minister, for those reflections in terms of the given point of emphasis, in terms of engagements that were raised by members, but more than that, also giving much more impetus to the thrust of the presentations. And we highly appreciate that. I want to believe that we are in a much more better position as a committee to prepare ourselves for the debate. It will be a favorable team when we finally debate the vote. And therefore, again, let me extend my gratitude to yourself and the team and the minister's apologies indeed accepted.
We will now release the minister, the deputy minister, and the team, so that we are then able to deal with some in-house rules. Have a wonderful afternoon, GM and the team.
Thank you
very much, Chairperson. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, members. Thank you.
Don't leave the chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Super.
Chairperson?
I get a sense that we have lost some of the members, and then we can't deal with the report and also the minutes.
Actually, the
minutes, not the report, the minutes. So can we agree that we'll deal with the minutes and the reports in the next meeting, which means that we'll again ride on the trade and Clinton trade is back.
I think next week we are much safer.
Okay.
For public administration, it's on the third. Our meeting is on the second, so
Yeah, great. I think if there is consensus on that, let me then again take this opportunity, honourable members, to express my gratitude to all of you for making this meeting a success. Indeed, the issue of a capable and ethical leadership is important. It is important for us to fulfil the expectation from the public in terms of holding this critical department and its entities to that mission. A professionalized public service is quite critical to our developmental state. We can't have a capable and a developmental state without a professionalized service. But more than that, I think what is quite important is the role that the School of Government plays in that regard. But also utilizing innovation, placing innovation to modernize our public service is quite important. Let me take this opportunity to indeed wish you a wonderful afternoon. It's a hectic a day for me. So for all of us in terms of this afternoon session. Again, the extension of gratitude to all of you honorable members and the committee secretary and the researchers and the parliamentary group and the media team that is around us. Have a wonderful afternoon. The meeting stands adjourned.
Record.